Broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm your host, Mike Salmon, alongside my co-host, Stephen Julian.
Happy anniversary, Mike.
Thank you. I thought you were going to sing there for a second.
I don't want to drive the listeners away.
Our little one-year shindig for the Gwinnett studio the other night.
It was a fabulous party. I'm glad you put it on, and I'm very glad you invited me. I know there was some debate going back and forth in your mind, but thank you.
You were actually number one on the invitation list.
Oh, thanks. It was a great time, and happy anniversary. I'm glad to be here.
And we had a lot of great folks there, and speaking of great folks, we got a couple here in the studio. I want to introduce you to William Lawson. He is with the Metropolitan Capital Funding Group, and also Dr. Leslie Gaskill will be joining us on the show today. We're going to start with William. William Lawson is a commercial financing advisor for Metropolitan Capital Funding. Good morning, William. How are you?
Fine. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Great. Doing great. Glad to have you here on the show. Tell us all about Metropolitan Capital Funding. What is the business and what do you do?
Okay. Well, Metropolitan Capital Funding is a small business commercial financing consulting and brokerage firm that has several financing solutions to businesses of all sizes and industries that need any form of commercial financing.
You're based here in Duluth now?
Here in Duluth, Georgia.
And who are the types of customers and companies and businesses that you serve?
Small to middle-sized companies in the service industry, medical industry, commercial real estate, building trades, retail, restaurants, food and beverage.
Now, when companies are looking for capital funding, if the banks say no, there are other options. Would you be considered one of those other options?
Yes. Well, as an intermediary agent or broker, we represent several non-bank financing solutions and providers that offer the bank alternative.
William, let me ask a kind of a follow-up to that. If the banks say yes, is there a potential that a client would want to talk to you because of some of the alternative funding that might be a better solution than the bank?
Well, every now and then there are solutions where that are provided by banks that that might not be immediately local in the marketplace to any given business owner. So sometimes we, in relationship with those banks, you know, can be a part of the introductory process to a bank program that's available.
And I think sometimes when people think of alternative lending, they think only of when the bank says no. But you, for small business owners, there are some short-term situations. There are some kind of special situations. Kind of unpack some of those special and short-term situations.
Well, there's accounts receivable type financing, asset-based lending, real estate secured financing products that are either not widespread available because a local bank is geared towards a local capital pool to invest. So therefore, the institutional markets that have a reach beyond the immediate locale of a bank is also a good viable prospect for financing.
We're talking with William Lawson with Metropolitan Capital Funding. And William, for a company that would like to maybe expand or grow their business and they need some funding, how quickly does that process work and how does that process begin?
It actually starts with a consultative approach to getting into the intake process by having them fill out a questionnaire, a financial needs analysis. It also asks for a comprehensive checklist that allows us to find out from them exactly where their strengths, where their weaknesses are, what kind of ducks they have in a row as it relates to their business record keeping, financial statements, bank statements, that sort of thing.
And so when you say ducks in a row, you're talking about having all that paperwork there.
Usually the biggest thing that clients need to be navigated through is the application and due diligence requirements for receiving financing. So that's where a real estate attorney, a business financing advisor, a CPA, any professional intermediary that can walk them through the day-to-day requirements of getting finance or becoming more financeable, that's where we kind of step in and help.
Mike, you asked that follow-up question because you were thinking Duck Dynasty, weren't you? You were thinking that's what he was talking about.
I actually don't watch that program. I don't.
William, if I'm a small business owner, Mike said that small business owners looking to expand. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other situations that small business owners might find themselves in, especially when their first thought is not, let me go seek some alternative lending or funding? What are some of the, when you've sat with small business owners, when you've sat in the behind the commercial desk or and counseling them, what are they coming to you for? What are some of the things you've seen?
A lot of them are coming to us for working capital because they need to cover payroll, immediate overhead, debt relief. They want to reposition themselves to, you know, get out from under some of the business load that they're under because of, you know, a slow season or coming out of a dry spell. So a lot of them have immediate needs for working capital, cash flow issues, making payroll, you know, planning having a 2-month reserve of operating capital on standby.
And part of what you're doing is also kind of showing them the different assets they have that they have available to them. You know, certain if I'm a manufacturing company,
yes,
recognizing that the equipment I'm using, I mm-hmm. can actually borrow against the value of that.
Yes, you can also borrow against the value of your inventory or the value of your accounts receivable or the value of your contracts or purchase orders or even the value of your property if you happen to own that property that you work out of.
How short a term of loan as a business owner can I look to get, 30 days, 60 days? And then also, and I guess you probably go out as far as people need to, but kind of give me the universe.
Well, in short-term financing solutions like cash advances, factoring, you know, the unsecured business loans, minimum terms are 3 to 6 months. The maximum terms are 18 to 24.
When you're talking about a business that is coming to you and maybe looking to expand or they need to cover the payroll, let's say the business may not have the best credit or personally the person that runs the business doesn't have the best credit. If the company still has good cash flow, is there a program that will work for them?
There's a handful of programs out there. Obviously, you know, the better the credit, the better for the borrower. But in a situation where personal and business credit has been damaged because of having endured or weathered the storm of poor cash flow where you couldn't make certain obligations and meet expenses, you know, if your business is producing revenue, generating cash flow, you know, there are several programs. Once again, in the world of non-bank financing, those terms, it's market driven, but it's more accommodating and a little bit more forgiving, a little more lenient, you know, if the money is there but the credit isn't.
Generally, and you mentioned non-bank financing, mm-hmm. generally you look and tell me if this is true or not, but usually interest rates are a little bit higher for non-bank financing.
Yes.
Is that the case, and why is that?
Well, it's a market that exists all on its own. So therefore, they set the interest rate based upon the supply and the demand of what their capital being injected into the marketplace cultivates. So they know it's pretty much their ship, if you will. So they pretty much set the rate, the market. It sets the rate for providing the services.
William, I think sometimes if people were thinking about coming and talking to you, there might be a small part of that population of business owners who thinks, man, William just wants to sell me some kind of loan at the highest interest rate possible to line his pockets. I mean, I'm sure that's probably deep in the recesses of their mind, occasionally what some people are thinking. How do you break down that barrier? How do you show that your consultative approach is more than just about putting them into a loan?
Well, actually, we endeavor to get them into the best program with the best rate and term that they qualify for. There's no sense going for the ceiling just because we can get a deal done. I mean, the bottom line is if a person qualifies for the lowest rate that that they, as a side-by-side business owner and the business themselves being looked at next to each other on paper, we try to get them into the best rate possible.
And besides, you're trying to help them grow their business. It's not just about getting them a loan. It's about helping them expand and stuff like that because, number one, you want a repeat customer.
Exactly.
Number two, you want that business to survive and thrive, to send referrals and different things like that. So you're part of the counseling team. There's the banker, there's the alternative lender, there's their financial advisor, CPA, and all that. You're the one who goes, no, don't just say no.
Right. Yes, exactly. And, you know, we also disclose the interest rates of whatever program they qualify for. And then not every program has an interest rate. Some programs are discounted. So therefore, you can sell $100,000 worth of future accounts receivable in exchange for a lump sum of $85,000. So hence, there's no interest rate. It's a discount rate. So everything is not always about, you know, gouging for a high interest rate. It's also about getting them into the best program that meets their business cash flow.
Our guest today is William Lawson with Metropolitan Capital Funding. And I know, William, you work with a lot of companies that have a history and a track record. They've been around for a while.
Of course.
What about for that entrepreneur who's just getting his business off the ground? You've mentioned a lot of different programs you have.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about that new
startups.
Business.
Startups. Yeah, startups. The wonderful world of startups. It's a different kind of animal, actually. You know, there's a startup that is, well, an impulsive idea. You're at Walmart, you're waiting online, and there's 20 people ahead of you, so you glance over at the newsstand rack, and you see Entrepreneur Magazine, and you pick it up, and it says $50,000 to start your own cleaning business. Well, you know. So you have those whimsical startups, and then you have those feasible, marketable startups where you have relevant industry experience, management, you have a proven idea, you've cut your teeth in an assistant or general management capacity, and now you have an opportunity to step out on your own. You know, you've done the research and the planning, and so therefore you have a business that is more viable and marketable and hence financeable, you know, and part of your plan means you are now stepping into the opportunities to, one, receive private lending or private investing or a combination of the two. You need a location to start. You know, so there are, for qualified startups, case-by-case basis, there is financing available.
William, you work with different business owners of different sizes. Kind of a little clarifying question. Mm-hmm. You said small to medium-sized business. One of the things I find interesting in my line of work, there's a very different definition.
Right.
You know, I think ERISA technically defines small business as 100 employees or less.
Right.
I've been around some 100 employee businesses. They're medium to large to me at times.
Right.
So kind of.
Well, a small business is actually defined by the size of the employees in relation to the sales volume that they generate.
Okay.
So you might be a 1 to 5 employee business, but generate $20 million a year. You know, so it really comes down to a ratio between how many employees you have and what your sales volume is. Typically, $500,000 a year to $2.5 million is a small business under the microcap parameters, and then $2.5 million and above is your more middle market companies that do between $2.5 million to $25 million or so.
So, two different kinds of people that are listening to this interview. One is people who go, "Man, I need some funding. I need to call William, and he'll help me out." Second thing is, talk a little bit to the different types of business owners that you're looking to do referrals with, that you're looking to build relationships with their clients, and vice versa for you. Who are you wanting to talk to?
Well, I mean, for example, this time of the year, there's a lot of CPAs and financial advisors and money managers, business brokers that have clients, insurance brokers and agents as well who have business clients, you know, real estate brokers and agents who serve commercial property owners, you know, any business that's in dialogue or relationship or allegiance with other businesses that are in need of capital, you know, we also talk to them as well to see how we can best serve their clients.
Can you tell William knows his stuff?
Again, I wish we'd get people who are passionate about what they do helping
one
people.
Of these days, we'll find someone that's passionate about what they do. Obviously, William, when you're talking to and interviewing and having your consultation with prospective clients for you, you want to get to know them.
Yes.
Just as well, they want to get to know you. They want to get to know William. They want to get to know Metropolitan Capital Funding. Tell us a little bit about your background, because it's obvious this is not something you just started last month. You've been doing this for a while. So tell us about your background and tell us about the company's background.
Well, I have a 9-year background in commercial financing. I started off as a licensed residential mortgage broker doing homes for purchases and refinances. Hated it. You know, I met a builder developer who was doing some commercial development in Orlando, Florida. That turned me on to the commercial real estate side of things, which is actually my real passion, commercial real estate related, you know, deals. And we got into a project where there was a supermarket. Our owner wanted to buy another building. We helped him buy the building. Then once he got the building, we had to help him find financing for inventory. We had to help him find financing for new vehicles, shelving, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So that took us further into the various programs necessary that were outside of real estate related, but necessary to help him grow and stock and manage his business. So it just took on a life of its own. And we just, 9 years later, we've made some very good relationships with banks, lenders, private investors. Locally, you know, we're doing commercial real estate investing with some residential rehabbers, builders and developers who are rehabbing properties and fixing them. Abroad, we're getting into multifamily, you know, properties as well. So, you know, it's just been a wonderful ride of just, you know, taking an individual who needs capital and introducing to an institution who has capital to lend or invest.
I think you might have just kind of answered my next question, because you're talking about all the cookie jars you have your hand in. I can tell you really enjoy it. You've mentioned the word passion a couple times. What is it about the capital funding that you do that excites you, that creates that passion? What do you enjoy the most about your job?
Well, you would think that it's the money we make at closings, but it's actually this personal and professional satisfaction that we get when we see a solution be provided to somebody that needs it. We have clients that had that unfortunately, for whatever reason, got turned down by the local bank. Great people to bank with, do their checking and savings with, but sometimes the bank just couldn't make the deal cross the finish line for them. We happen to help them get financing to meet payroll, to take care of immediate expenditures, to help them buy out a partner, to help them refinance their balloon mortgage on their facility, help them get the additional vehicles for their, you know, when you see companies that can grow and continue to maintain and retain employees, that feeds their families, helps their local economy, create jobs. I mean, that's a very good, rewarding feeling.
I think you mentioned you got started down in the Orlando area.
Orlando, Florida area.
But
yes.
Now here in Atlanta, especially Gwinnett County, this is a lot of fertile ground here. I mean, this is, I would think, for your company, a great place to do business.
Yes, Gwinnett County has been great to us. We've joined the chamber a few months ago, shortly after opening up our office down here on Satellite 2180 Satellite Boulevard. We met a handful of property owners, mom and pop business owners. I mean, it's Gwinnett County is a great place to work and do business and raise a family.
Absolutely. Well, for those business leaders or business owners and folks that are listening right now that would like to find out more and reach out to you, where can they find out more about Metropolitan Capital Funding?
Our website, www.metrocfg, short for Metropolitan Capital Funding Group. It's metrocfg.com.
And all the contact information is there, address,
yes.
Phone numbers,
you can
everything.
You can call anyone in the intake staff, you know, will answer the phone at 1-800-441-7297.
And you mentioned the consultative process. I mean, if they want to have a discussion with you as far as, you know, do I want to expand? What kind of programs are available? Is there a cost for that?
No. We charge no upfront fees whatsoever. We charge no upfront fees. You know, we're paid for providing a service. If there's not an opportunity to provide a service, there's no need to receive any money.
Great. Well, keep up the great work. Congratulations so far on your success here in the Duluth area. And I know just great things ahead of you are coming. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. William Lawson with Metropolitan Capital Funding joining us here on Gwinnett Business Radio. Our next guest now is Dr. Leslie Gaskill. Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. I'm good. And how are you?
Great. Tell us about your practice, where you're located, and the types of medicine that you do practice.
I am located on Abbotts Bridge Road in Duluth. I'm primary care. We practice family medicine, internal medicine, and I have a passion for prevention of heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes.
In fact, you're well known. There's been a lot of publicity for the work you've done in the world of heart attacks, strokes, diabetes prevention, and so forth. Heart attacks, I mean, is that the leading cause of death these days? Is it cancer? What is that? I mean, that's right up there, obviously.
It is right up there. It is the leading cause.
What are some things that you find when people come in that can help prevent heart attacks? Is it just family history? Is it not eating right? What are some of the things that can help people avoid the heart attacks?
That's a great question. Traditionally, as a world, we're focused on things like your age, your gender, your smoking status, your cholesterol status, and your blood pressure. And using all those factors, these things are basically thrown into a formula, and this stratifies patients as to whether or not they really deserve treatment or need treatment or not. The problem with that is that it neglects many, many causes of plaque buildup in the arteries, which is atherosclerosis. So atherosclerosis is plaque in the arteries, which can cause coronary artery disease. You know, it can either be in your carotid arteries, which would cause a stroke, where your blood doesn't get enough blood supply, or heart disease, where your heart muscle doesn't get enough supply. So what is being missed is that the ultimate cause of atherosclerosis in the arteries is a result of inflammation. Inflammation is a broad term, but inflammation is something that becomes systemic, and it acts as a catalyst for for the formation of plaque in your arteries. So with the prevention strategy, we're ultimately trying to identify all the causes, of inflammation that a patient has, and that could be from stress, bad diet, no exercise, genetic markers, any kind of autoimmune disease like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, Sjogren's syndrome, diabetes, prediabetes, insulin resistance, vitamin D deficiency, sleep disorders, sleep apnea. A huge one is periodontal disease. So when you identify these causes of inflammation and you put a stop to the causes of inflammation, you can ultimately not only prevent a patient from building up plaque in the arteries, which is atherosclerosis, but you can also reverse disease. The treatment or method is very patient-specific. There are no two patients alike. You have to take into their lifestyle, their habits, their genetic markers. And sometimes I'll have a patient say, you know, well, why do you want to check my genetic markers? We can't change my genes. And that's an excellent question. No, we cannot change your genes. But by checking your genetic markers in the blood, it's like ammunition for knowing how to treat a patient. And it actually gives us information on a diet, a type of diet that a patient should have, because some people, for example, with a gene called the APOE gene, need a very, very restricted healthy intake fat level, and other people on the opposite ends of the spectrum need a more liberal fat intake. If you eat the opposite ends of where you fall in that genetic pattern, you actually stimulate your body to make plaque.
So Dr. Gaskill, is the is the fact that your prevention method with each patient kind of unique and different based on their genetic markers and other things, is that what's setting you apart from some of the others in your field? Is that what making your practice unique and different? Or is it also the fact that this term inflammation, you're kind of focusing on it and there's a lot more to look at than just, you know, if A, then B and C and stuff like that that others are saying?
Well, as many people are aware, inflammation is felt to be a driving force or catalyst for cancers as well. The technique or strategy that we used is something that I learned from Dr. Bale and Amy Dineen. There's a book coming out in January called Beat the Heart Attack Gene, and I am currently the only Atlanta provider of this strategy and have been since 2008. And our success rate has been phenomenal. We've only had one man have a heart attack and nobody have a stroke since 2008. Of all of our compliant patients, this one man ran a 10K the day before. He just wasn't taking all of his medications. He's still with us. He's being compliant. But the traditional method of preventing heart attacks and strokes, one of the big problems is that we're currently focused on the plumbing problem. In other words, if you have a straw, which is like a vessel, we're only focused on the blockage in the straw. And that is a good cause or a reasonable and common cause of heart attacks and strokes. But the truth of the matter is 80% of heart attacks and strokes every single day, 80% of heart attacks and strokes every day, I'll say it again, actually occur from plaque rupture, which is where the plaque ruptures through the arterial wall. So the focus of this strategy is dealing with the arterial wall, not the lumen or the inside of the artery.
Why is that? If the 80%, this is the 80%, the problem is here. Why are most of the physicians looking at that 20% then? Is that, does that make sense?
Is tradition the easy answer there, Dr. Gaskill? Or
tradition, just lack of awareness of what's out there. You know, for example, I talk about Tim Russert every day. Everybody's, I'm sure you're aware of the Meet the Press news moderator. Tim Russert, you know he had excellent health care, but he had a normal nuclear stress test in April of 2008, passed it with flying colors, went to work. 6 weeks later, had a massive MI. He didn't die from the plumbing problem in his coronary arteries. He died from plaque rupture from within the wall of the arteries. And a nuclear stress test does not pick that up. So, you know, it shocked the world. They think that, oh, my, you know, nuclear stress test is the tell-all. We're not saying, or I'm not saying, that a nuclear stress test is a bad test. It's not a bad test. We order nuclear stress tests all the time. The point is that you can't tell somebody they don't have risk just because they passed their nuclear stress test or just because they passed their carotid ultrasound. Or cholesterol, for example. Many, many patients have beautiful cholesterol profiles and turn around and have a heart attack or stroke. You have to look for all the causes, what we call fires, the inflammatory causes that ultimately are catalysts for the buildup of plaque. And, you know, one of Dr. Bale and Amy Dineen's pet peeves is that, you know, just because someone is older, they're going to have atherosclerotic disease. That's absolutely not true. Atherosclerotic disease is a pathological process. I mean, you can be 90 years old and not have any plaque buildup in the arteries. It's a pathological process. It can be reversed. And we see it all the time in our patients. We basically, again, tailor treatment to each individual patient. We detect what their disease is, if any. We assess it. We determine what kind of plaque they have. Is it soft plaque? Is it hard plaque? And then the goal is to see disease reversal or regression and avoid progression. And these patients are closely monitored. When they understand what's going on, they're very much engaged, and it's exciting to them.
I would think the patients like words like regression, and you know they like hearing those words, that we can turn this around, not just react to the next crisis. Obviously, they're going to get buy-in with that.
Exactly.
And I guess a lot of this explains then when you hear about that person that, you know, they seem like they're in great shape and they've always kept themselves in great shape, yet they have a stroke or a heart attack, and it's like, how does that happen? Obviously, you've answered kind of a lot of those questions. You talk about the prevention, Dr. Gaskill, of heart attacks and strokes and helping with diabetes and preventing this. Is there a way to measure that success rate? That, hey, had we not done this, this would, you know, how do you measure the success of where you're of what you're doing? Hard question, I know.
Well, I was going to say, apart from since 2008, you haven't. I mean, we've had other success rates other than since 2008? You haven't had anybody other than the one person, right?
Right.
So what other? And maybe Mike, the question is, if for the future, is this, how do you spread this to other practices so that they can have the success rate that you're having?
Well, this is something that is going to be, you know, largely put out in the media. It'll be in the book. It's been available for quite some time. You know, patients share their success stories from what they've seen in my practice. It's just, sometimes people just don't take the time to educate themselves on what else is out there.
Are you having patients who already are with other cardiologists kind of coming to you because what you're doing is unique and tailored and specific?
We absolutely do. And the reason is I oftentimes get patients who already have had bypass surgery or stents. And when they go to their cardiologist and the cardiologist is talking about, well, yeah, you know, we'll do another cath. And we see some disease progression and we may have to go to another stent. You know, the last thing they want to hear is another stent. If you get to the root problem, you should never, ever have to have another stent. And nobody should ever have to have one stent. It is detectable. It is reversible. And the key is catching the patient early enough.
What about someone who's, you know, been a bill of health their whole life and they say, well, there's not heart disease problems in my family. Should they still get checked out? I mean, is that something that maybe everybody should do, whether or not you have a family history of heart attacks or strokes or diabetes?
Absolutely. Again, you know, the things that are catalysts for the plaque buildup in the arteries, which is atherosclerotic disease, are multifactorial. Stress, bad diet, no exercise, genetic markers, inflammatory diseases, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, Sjogren's syndrome, vitamin D deficiency, sleep disorders, periodontal disease.
Got it.
You know, it's huge. I mean, it's very, very rare that we don't have a patient that we can't find something that can be reversed and prevent them from developing disease. And it's interesting. And at the same time, a little frustrating. Sometimes when you do a physical or we do a physical on a patient and, you know, just based on that simple cholesterol profile and their EKG, they're like, oh, is my EKG okay? Is my EKG okay? Well, yes, your EKG is okay, but that no way means that you're you're free from having a heart attack or stroke. In fact, my father died of a heart attack. His EKG was completely normal while he was having his heart attack, and that happens commonly. So an EKG is just looking at your rhythm at that moment in time.
You may have just touched upon what I was going to ask you next with your father, and my question was, you know, what led you to this? You're obviously passionate about the strokes and the diabetes and the heart attacks, and, you know, obviously as a doctor, there's many different practices of medicine you could have done. You're focusing on this. I'm sure there's a reason. Is it because of your father, or is there more to it than just that? But what led you to where you are today?
That is part of it, because my father's heart attack was completely missed. He went in with severe back pain, and that can also be a sign of a heart attack. His EKG was normal. He was actually put on the regular floor in the hospital. His oxygen saturations were dropping. He eventually went into multiple organ failure, and then somebody realized that his cardiac enzymes had been high from the beginning. And, yeah, it's tragic. It shouldn't have to happen. But you shouldn't even have to develop plaque buildup in the arteries in the first place. And the other thing about these genetic markers is when you find parents that have these markers or other family members, you can actually utilize some of these genetic markers in children and be more aggressive. And I'm not necessarily saying we want to start throwing children on statins like Lipitor and Crestor and Zocor and those kinds of things, but you can learn things about the specific types of diets that they should be incorporating into their lifestyle to prevent them from buildup. So power is knowledge, and it's exciting.
Dr. Gaskill, I think sometimes, at least from my experience, I'll talk to people who want to talk a lot about exercise and diet, and then I think sometimes I'll have experiences with people who want to talk about drugs and pharmaceuticals that'll help. Sounds like you're kind of taking a total picture. Also sounds like you're being proactive rather than just reactive. I love your comment about fixing the plumbing versus the 80% of what's really causing it. Is there anything else in the programs and in some of the treatments that you've done that we might not think of other than the diet, the exercise, sometimes medication, and the gene markers? Is it the gene markers that makes it so unique that's not being done?
And that's an excellent question. Every patient needs to realize that all of those factors are important. Everything. You can do 9 out of 10 things. You can exercise, eat right, take the medications and so forth and so on. But, for example, if the fire is in your gums with the periodontal disease, that alone can be the culprit for causing the atherosclerotic buildup. In fact, there was an article in Circulation, which is a major cardiology journal. In the March issue of that, they analyzed the clots of heart attack victims. And when they analyzed the clots of those heart attack victims, there was well over 70% of those clots that had periodontal pathogens, meaning the bacteria of periodontal disease that was ultimately felt to be a major contributor to the atherosclerotic disease that led to the heart attack. So you need to take everything into consideration. And I always teach my patients, all it takes is one fire to cause an event. It takes one fire to burn a house down, right?
Right.
One small fire. And that's
I only had two fires. It's not going to burn my house down. Yeah, one fire can cause everything to come down. It's interesting how unique your practice follows a unique model because your patients are unique. And because all of these diseases, there are unique causes in each and every person.
And, you learn things from different conferences, going in different parts of the country, from different experts and individuals. And we've just kind of taken that and brought it all to one model, not just, one or two individuals. But it works. It truly works.
And as you say, it's always evolving, too, because you never know everything. You might think you know everything, but you don't, because it's always evolving, and the next great thing might be right around the corner.
Right.
Is there a next great thing, by the way, to prevent heart attacks or diabetes, which is, of course, is a major problem, or strokes? Is there something that you can share with us that maybe they're working on behind the curtain that we don't know about yet, but it gives us hope that we might be able to help with these problems?
Not necessarily, other than the fact that the traditional model of stratifying the risk of a patient based on their age, their gender, their smoking status, their cholesterol levels, and blood pressure, other than the fact that that should completely be thrown out the window. It is not helpful. But we utilize all modalities. We use blood work, genetic markers, inflammatory markers. We use the carotid scans, the Doppler carotid scans, the CIMT. We use the coronary calcium scores. We order nuclear stress tests, echocardiograms. But one thing that's important to remember is not every patient needs every test. As I explain it to my patients, we develop a roadmap for each patient. You get an overall view, a roadmap, and the beauty of it is you can monitor what's going on. And one thing I like to share with my patients is that many, many, of course, are so afraid of medications. You hear horrible things. You know, your nose is going to fall off, your hair is going to fall out. When you take statins,
well, it's because of those commercials. They tell you for 5 seconds why it's good for you, then they go on for 2 minutes. What might happen?
Exactly. And what we always talk about is risk-benefit ratio. I would never, ever prescribe any medication to any one of my patients if I didn't feel that the benefit of the medication outweighed the risk. And at the end of the day, I always educate them and I let them know, hey, look, I'm just going to educate you. I'm going to tell you the facts, but you know, when you walk out of here, it's your choice if you want to take it. And they usually choose to take it. And that being said, we always monitor the effect of the medication. If it becomes, you know, where it's starting to affect one of their organs, you pull them off of it. And the other thing is a lot of patients have the misconception that once they're on medication, whether it be blood pressure or cholesterol medication or whatever it is, they think that they have to be on it for a lifetime. My goal is I tell my patients, if you look like you're about, or if you look like you're a ticking time bomb and you're going to walk outside and have a heart attack or stroke, I'm going to really, really, really urge you to take some medication. But my ultimate goal is to help you normalize things, improve your lifestyle, reduce your stress, do all those things, and get you off of those medications. And we also help with weight loss. We have a program that we're using for that that's very successful. When people can lose a lot of weight and get their carbohydrate and, sugar load down, you know, have their diabetes, diet, and exercise controlled, when all those things happen, their inflammatory markers start to come down. You see plaque regression instead of progression. They see it. They get very, very excited.
I would think one of your frustrations might be saying, you know, you should do this and do this as far as your nutrition, your exercise, and so forth. Yeah. And they kind of don't really follow what the roadmap that you talked about until they actually have that stroke or heart attack. And then it finally hits them, you know what, I need to finally do it. So that might be the thing that finally gets them to it. I know you must be frustrated saying, I told you you should have been doing it in the first place. So, but obviously it's reality when it actually hits you. You realize, okay, I should have been listening to Dr. Gaskill from the very beginning. You have something that I understand called, and you may have touched upon, a concierge practice, which is kind of exploding now across the country as far as the model. Is that more of that individual roadmap you talked about, or what is the concierge practice? What does that mean?
The roadmap that I was talking about is just in terms of designing a roadmap for individualized treatment strategies for a patient and preventing and reversing atherosclerotic disease, which causes heart attacks and strokes. The concierge model is an explosive concept in the country, and it's been around for quite some time. It used to be something tailored more for the geriatric and the wealthy populations. It's becoming a lot more popular amongst young working professionals, even moms who are busy, people obviously who don't have much free time. But what we're doing is developing a hybrid model. I'm going to limit the number of patients I see to about 500 that will be private patients or concierge patients. With the current healthcare system, as I think most people are aware, for doctors and hospitals all over the country, reimbursements are dropping. Overheads are rising. The gap's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And as most of you may or may not be aware, most of the practices are being bought or have sold their practices to hospitals. And you know, a lot of doctors are giving up with this big gap and feeling frustrated and saying, just, you know, forget this. I'm going to throw in the towel. I'm going to become an employed physician. Let the hospital tell me what to do. Once you sign that dotted line, they pretty much own you and your practice. And they can tell you how many patients to see. They can tell you how much revenue you got to bring in a day. That's a rather scary thought, number one, as a patient, but also as a physician, that when you walk in the room, you got 3 minutes to see this patient and you got to bill X number of dollars of revenue. Wow. That is very, very disruptive to the whole purpose of medical care and good medical care. So we have opted, we are not going to sell our practice to a hospital, but what we are going to do, because I already spend a lot of time with my patients, I teach them, I educate them, they like the personalized care, they know why they're taking a medication or not taking something. And the concierge model is something that enables a patient to become a member of my practice. They pay an additional fee, but they're guaranteed 24/7 access to me. They do not have to wait. When they call, they say they are a concierge patient, a private patient. We get them in, we get them out. You know, busy executives that don't have time. They got to travel to Europe, you know, catch a flight down the airport at 4 o'clock. Hey, look, Mr. Jones, we'll get you in, we'll get you out, and you can catch that flight. If they are out of town and they forget their meds, they've got my cell phone number. They can call my cell, you know, I'm out of town, I forgot my medication, or, you know, I've got this rash. I don't know if this is serious. Do I need to go to the emergency room, or is this something that can wait? Well, take a picture of your rash and send it to me. I'll tell you, you know, if it looks like it's something you can wait for, or you need to come in right away. So it's a very popular method. Our patients are really, really excited about it. You know, the other patients will still get care in my practice. They won't get the extra care. But we've always provided a lot of care and attention, explanation. But with the way the system is going, we can't sustain that model, nor can anybody, with the declining reimbursements and the rising overhead. Something has to change.
Wow. Well, I feel like we could talk more about this, but for those that want to find out more about your practice, where can they find out? I'm sure you have a website they can go to. Give us all the contact information. Again, your location, your website. Give us all that information, please.
My practice website is drlesliegaskill.com, and it links to a website called plaquebusters.net, like plaque in the arteries, P-L-A-Q-U-E. Busters, BUSTERS.net. Both of those sites link to one another. And our office number is 770-495-9995. We just signed on to start taking concierge patients. So we're getting that. We're starting to sign them up, and then we still take patients as well for general care.
I've never heard of anything like that, but I could see the value there. That's unbelievable.
It's probably a trend that we're going to see happening across healthcare for people who decide to stay private.
Right.
We have the doctor that's on the cutting edge of that right here on this program. Dr. Gaskill, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Dr. Leslie, you know, Stephen, we have like experts, you know, like Dr. Gaskill here and Mr. Lawson here. I mean, experts in their field. I mean, we talk to them every single day.
That's why I said happy anniversary and why I'm looking forward to our second year.
Absolutely. I want to thank our guest very much for joining us today, Dr. Leslie Gaskill, for joining us on the program, and also William Lawson from Metropolitan Capital Funding. A quick reminder that Gwinnett Business Radio can be heard throughout the day on the Gwinnett Business Radio X station, and that you can listen to any of our programs 24/7 by logging on to GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. For Stephen Julian.
So I learned about getting my ducks in a row and be careful of the plumbing in my arteries.
All in one program.
It's amazing.
Where else in Atlanta radio are you going to get that kind of stuff?
You know, the eclectic nature of this show just continues to fascinate me.
Absolutely. For Stephen Julian, I'm Mike Salmon. I'm the guy that uses the smaller words on this group today. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.